Impress your friends. Amaze your coworkers. Make your family proud. Here's what you need to know. I'm going to tell you what you need to
know. I'm going to tell you. All right, second spring training game. Royals 7-3. That's what you need to know. That's the score right now. Royals are winning 7-3 in their second spring training game out in Surprise. Our need to know brought to you by Easton Roofing, Joe Spiker and his team. Best in the business. They're the folks that have been on my roof. They're going to be on my mom's roof very soon as she's getting a little bit concerned. She said, I don't know. It's been a long time. I don't even know how old this roof is. And she saw the guys from Easton Roofing working in her neighborhood. She said, I'm going to have to call them. Estimates always free. Suggestions, they're built on integrity. Let Easton Roofing educate you about every possible roofing solution for your home or business. And right now, when you mention 810, you get 10% off up to $500 on a re-roof, roof repairs, attic insulation, or gutters. That's right. Mention 810 and save 10%. Go to EastonRoofing.com for more details. Easton Roofing, getting you back to life, getting you back to business faster for both commercial and residential roofing. 913-257-5426. Estimates have to be written and signed between now and March 18th. This is not an offer or inducement to pay part or all of any insurance deductible. Call Easton Roofing today at 913-257-5426, online at EastonRoofing.com. The story today, Jackson Coar, two innings of shutout baseball, two innings, three hits, no runs, no walks, two strikeouts. Ryan McBroom, his first home run of the spring to get things started for the Royals out in Surprise. And, of course, the big news, Hunter Dozier, 4 years, $25 million, $10 million fifth-year option for Hunter Dozier. And the Royals are trying to lock up that core. Hunter Dozier, a guy who had a great 2019, battled COVID to start 20, never did get on track. But, of course, he is signing on for the Royals, and a lot of optimism that he's going to look a lot more like his 2019. Dozier asked what makes him optimistic about this team winning soon.
Well, I think it started in the offseason. I mean, what Dayton and the front office and Mr. Sherman, the pieces they were able to bring in this offseason, I mean, it's hard not to get excited. And the buzz that's in the clubhouse right now, the way we go out there for practice, it's a lot of fun. It's the most excited I've been for a season that I've ever been a part of. Very talented room in there, and I just can't wait to get it going.
I hope he's right. I think it is a talented room. I think it's more talented. I think it's definitely going in the right direction. And I feel confident that the Royals will be back in the playoffs during his 4 years. First of all, I think they're going to expand the playoffs, and so that'll make it easier. But, you know, one of the guys that's going to be big on if it is going to get better, Nicky Lopez today, 0-for-2 with a walk, struck out two times in the game today, so not getting the bat on the ball. Nicky Lopez said he had a different goal this offseason than he did a year ago.
Last offseason, you know, it was to, you know, get bigger, stronger. And I think this offseason I focused way more on the hitting aspect and what I needed to do. And, you know, I know what I did to get up to, you know, the big leagues, and I need to just get back to that. You know, put the ball in play, play small ball, batting. I mean, I'm going to be batting low in the order. I know that. So any way to get on, any way to move a runner so that it's in scoring position for Witt, Mondi, Benny, Soler to drive him in, that's what I need to do. And slowly but surely getting back to that, working very hard with Terry and Mabes, and I worked pretty hard this offseason. And obviously in spring training, you're just trying to get your feet wet right now. But, you know, I like where it's headed.
He did have a single yesterday. He's batting 250 on the short, you know, spring training season, mm-hmm. for what it's worth right now. But, you know, bulked up last year, this year, focused on the hitting.
Yeah. He went on to say in a later answer, shorter to the ball, more compact. He said I had a lot of motion, or I think he said a lot of motion or movement in my swing a year ago. He kind of wants to tighten that up and just kind of be short, quick to the ball and be the contact guy.
I mean, aren't you working on your swing every offseason?
You'd think, but I mean, I'm
not trying to be a jerk.
Oh, I know.
This is one that just kind of it goes without saying. I do get it. I mean, I think where he's coming from is, you know, maybe he, you know, was so focused on trying to get stronger that he ended up just weight training more than yeah. actually hitting. Look, I don't think you have to. I've seen a lot. Who I forget who was the Cuban shortstop for the White Sox
with the wrists?
Yes.
Alexi Ramirez.
I mean, I honestly felt like the guy, he looked sick.
He did.
He was so skinny out there. Yes. And he swung a massive bat and had 20 home runs.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to be 240 pounds to hit the ball over the wall. I mean, it doesn't hurt.
No.
Right? To get that kind of strength. But it's in the wrists.
Especially if you don't prospect out to be that guy. I mean, there's some guys you'd say, yeah, get in the weight room and build up some bulk. But when you're the second baseman, and I don't realize modern second basemen are different than they were in 40 years ago, but Nicky Lopez getting big and strong, to me, is not the most important thing to his future as a productive Royals player.
No, I agree. So, look, I like what I hear. I think, he's kind of done talking. He's had a couple of years being the guy that, talking about getting better. I think he's just ready to be better.
Yeah.
And, if he is, this team takes a big step towards contending. He is a huge part of the equation if they're going to contend. Big win for Kansas over the weekend. They take down Baylor 71-58. Jayhawks dominating Baylor on the glass, 48-28, the rebound differential. 20 boards better Kansas was. Still not shooting great, 3 of 16 from 3, but holding Baylor to just 6 of 26 from 3-point range, 35% from the field. Baylor also just 6 of 16 on free throws. I mean, I don't want to burst anybody's bubble, but I think there is an element here of the fact that, maybe Baylor's not at its best. Here's Bill Self talking about the win over Baylor, said it was really big.
I think it's a huge win for us. It doesn't mean it's not going to get you a ring on your finger or anything like that, but it's a big win. And, to finish 12-6 in the league, which, I think worst case scenario. I mean, I guess mathematically it could be different, but that would probably put us in a position to be, third probably in the league. I don't see West Virginia losing two, but we did good. We did well, and the players have handled everything great. And we did hit the bump in the road in January, and somehow the guys, we went through that period of time where we played with no energy and were duds, and somehow they kind of responded and got their legs back, and we've been pretty good since. We didn't give the game away, but we could easily won in Austin and really finished strong. But I'm really happy how we played tonight and how we finished.
And absolutely, Coach Self should be, right? There's no reason for him not to be. But I just think if you're honest with yourself, I bring this up just so that Kansas fans, because I saw some of the Twitter stuff, and it seemed like some people were like, well, I don't know that this was actually Baylor at its best. I just bring it up to you haven't reached Gonzaga level, right? And so if the expectations are that, well, it's Final Four or bust, which at Kansas a lot of times they are that, I don't think Baylor is what they were before all these kids got sick. And I don't know that they will be that. I think it may be a really sad story that Baylor never comes close to, regaining their form. In this game against the Jayhawks, like I said, from the field, they shot 348 from the field. On the season, they shoot 494 from the field. In the game from three, they shot 231, 23% from three-point range. On the year, they shot 420 from three-point range. From the free throw line, they shot 375, 37.5%. On the year, they shot 68.9%. Kansas had a lot to do with the first two numbers. The third one, there's no magic to what happened. They clearly weren't themselves at the free throw line. I think there's reason to believe they weren't themselves. Kansas can beat only the team that's on the floor out there. It is a really good win. I agree with Bill Self. It's a big confidence-building win, and they didn't just skate by.
Right.
Right? They kicked their ass. So, I mean, I think there's reason to believe that Kansas on its best day, against Baylor on its best day, could be a game. You've got evidence there to prove it. But I just think, also there needs to be some understanding that Baylor is not right. They barely got by – God, who was it?
Iowa State. Down 15 early, I think, and eventually corrected things and pulled away at the end. But
yeah, so they're coming along, but I think there's still a ways to go. I definitely think Kansas is playing its best basketball, which is what you want this time of year. And they beat the only team that they could beat. That was the Baylor team that was on the floor, and so it's a big win for Kansas. It gets them into the top four seeds.
Most of the bracketologies that are out there have them now back as a number four seed, and maybe it opens the door to them being a three seed, get another win against Baylor, win the Big 12 tournament, and I think you are a three seed. Yeah, that's what we talked about last week. Beat Baylor, win the Big 12 tournament, and you're a three seed. Yeah, you know, I mean, I suppose maybe you could play your way into a two. Maybe, but I think probably three seed is the top for Kansas. But we'll see. We'll see what happens with the other teams that are out there and where they end up going. Some other college basketball news. Leonard Hamilton agreeing to a five-year extension to stay at Florida State through 24-25. It'll pay him $2.25 million annually plus bonuses. The bonuses better be pretty big. That seems low to me for the job he's done at Florida State. Does it seem low to anybody
else?
Yeah.
I was waiting for more numbers, and I thought, wait, well, that's it?
Yeah, I'm like 2.25. How about 3.5? Like, he's got you, you know, and maybe he needs some NCAA – maybe there's big NCAA tournament bonuses that are there, that's what they're saying. Hey, yeah, great regular season, but, you know, nothing in the tournament yet. Nebraska, their leading scorer, who actually just set a record for Pinnacle Bank Arena, Teddy Allen. Less than a week ago, he set the record for points in a game in Pinnacle Bank Arena. He has left the Huskers basketball team. It is not going the way Husker fans thought it would go when they hired, well, Scott Frost, but certainly not Fred Hoiberg either yet, right?
No. No, it's like the Husker going to – that's like almost a Missouri, of course, you know. They don't usually have quite the doom – the fatalistic view that Missouri fans do, particularly in basketball, because they're generally never very good, you know, good enough to have that. But yeah, that's a hell of a week.
We're going to talk some Chiefs football with Josh Edwards from CBS Sports, some NFL football, some draft, but some Chiefs draft in particular coming up in our next segment. First, though, Brett Veach talking today to the media, kind of talking about what the offseason should look like. He was asked about the O-line and his philosophy as far as building it.
Just the general football 101 is get a quarterback and then build through the offense and defensive line. At the same time, you know, the reality of it is, you know, how the draft flows and, you know, what's available to you. You have to make, you know, certainly good decisions and not overdraft or go in different directions. So when you talk about just, again, that 101 philosophy about once you secure a quarterback, you want to build through the offensive lines, I certainly think you can make a case for that on the defensive side and continuing to throw money and resources on the defensive line. I would say that it's the similar priority for the offensive line and probably those windows of opportunities of whether players available in free agency or whether what was available to us at the draft at that time wasn't available. You know, last year when Lucas was there in the third round, certainly that was a guy that, you know, we made a priority to go get. I would say in years past, whether that be not having a first round pick or not having the lineman that you wanted available, graded as high, you know, available for when you're picking, probably, you know, had something to do with that. But I don't think it's certainly one of those things that you don't ever go into an off season or draft and not have in your mind that one of the priorities is to continually invest in the offense line. And that's probably why, again, when you think about the last few drafts, you know, the players have to be in those ranges. You don't, you know, I guess in your mind, you don't want to draft fifth round lineman in the third round and you want it to be, you know, you want to have that value representative in regards to what round you're picking in. So I would say a lot of it had to do with just maybe where the picks fell in each round, what was available to us in free agency. Again, I think you saw that amount of effort and resources put in the defense line. But I think in general, your philosophy is always to build up front. And, you know, I'm sure we'll do that this offseason.
Part of the question was about, you know, not taking a lineman high, that Nyang in the third round, you know, Mitch Morse in the second round, you know, and Brett Veach didn't make that Mitch Morse pick, that, you know, he hadn't really taken a lineman high. I think that will change this year. I think offensive tackle is probably going to be their first pick just based upon need and the board. But his point about you don't want to end up taking a fifth-round offensive tackle in the third round, well, you don't want to end up taking a late second around offensive tackle at the bottom of the first. And I think that's why it's going to be important to either get some of the hurt guys back or to find somebody in free agency to where you feel like you don't have to take that offensive tackle. Reaching, when you draft for need and you say, we got to have this position at this round, that's where you can really end up reaching and having a bad pick. You look past somebody who's going to be a star at another position to reach for that position of need. So I think it's going to be important to find an offensive lineman. Brett Veach asked for the timelines on Mahomes, Mitchell Schwartz, and Eric Fisher.
Yeah, well, I'm just looking at my medical notes here. So Pat had his toe surgery on 2/10. You know, talking to Rick late last week, it's a 3-month recovery. So we're hopeful, you know, somewhere around that mandatory mini camp, if we have, you know, we certainly think by training camp, he'll be good to go and we'll be smart with him. Mitch just recently had his disc worked on and we're hopeful for him to return to training camp, and the same thing with Fish. So we're hopeful both these guys will, you know, complete the rehab and be available for training camp and to start the 2021 season. I would probably say Pat's ahead of them just because of the, you know, that type of injury and probably a quicker recovery, but hopefully have all three ready to go by training camp.
Very optimistic. We spent a lot of time, you know, talking about this, like, is that really right? That would be the best case scenario. He ended up saying mid-August on Eric Fisher when asked about it again. And that, I think, is the probably the headline for Kansas City. I think the headline for ESPN was Patrick Mahomes and timeline on his toe, 3 months. He was hoping to be ready for minicamp, definitely ready for training camp. But, you know, I think the headline in Kansas City is that Eric Fisher could be ready in what would be 6.5 months.
Yeah, to the point where people, like, had to ask again, are you sure about this?
I mentioned that after Brett Veach left the Zoom call, the media kept asking the PR guy, are you sure about that? Is he right about that? Like, he's saying mid-August? Which was, you know, Lebo and I kind of laughed. It's like, the general manager just gave you a date, even read from paperwork and said, my notes from, like, what more do you need? Like, what are you, like, trying to protect him? Well, we're going to print it, but want to give him a chance to retract it. Well, everybody else heard it. It's going on the radio. You may not put it in, you know, your paper or on your television station, but I'm putting it on the radio.
He said,
you know, mid-August, he says. I would be stunned. Like, he's there on the sideline doing some running and stuff like that? Yes. Stunned if Eric Fisher is ready to play week one. That may be the best case scenario. I just can't see it playing out that way. All right, one more from Brett Veach. Now, the Chiefs have been in a win-now mode, and I get it. When it's been 50 years since you won a Super Bowl, why you would be all in 18, 19, and then even winning it in 19 to run it back in 20. But is it time now to maybe change the philosophies, maybe shift gears and look more long-term?
Yeah, no, I certainly think that, you know, you feel good about, and I've said this before, you know, you have the head coach and you have the quarterback, and now it's a matter of, you know, I think to your point, you're when you're so close and maybe entering that, I guess, 19 season when, you know, had won a Super Bowl in 50 years and then we have a terrific season and we fell short. And that mindset is, you know, you're going all in because you know how hard it is to do it and to get there. And then you get there and then you win it and then you're able to retain most of those players and get back there again. I think if you live by that mantra that sooner or later it's going to, like you said, just blow up. So I think being more strategic and just being smart in our decisions, like I said, I don't think, you know, we're going to go out there and try to reinvent the wheel, and we're going to be smart and build for the long haul. And you know, that certainly addresses the offensive defensive line. And again, it goes back to football 101, and that's what we'll do. We'll invest in the offensive and defensive lines, and, you know, we'll fill in the skill as we go along. So, I mean, I do think that, you know, once you get the things that you know that you have to have in place, then I think you can be more patient and let the market and free agency come to you and let the draft come to you and kind of operate in that approach.
Unless he's trying to put a false narrative out there because he thinks these things are going to be listened to, and I'm sure they are, by other teams. He said offensive and defensive lines how many times in just that cut?
I think I counted five, or was it four?
Yeah. Because And that's, listen, if you need to hear Brett Veach say that and you're the Broncos or Raiders or Chargers to figure out that they're going to do something on the offensive line, then you should be fired. Because, I mean, all you got to do is look at the roster and look at what happened. You know they need to do the offensive line. Defensive line, you know they've got some guys that their contracts are up. So I think there's reason to believe they'd go there as well. I'd be shocked if they didn't take an offensive lineman and a defensive lineman, at least one each, in their first three picks. Like, I can see it maybe second and third round because somebody fell to them that, like, you know, if the, you know, the Alabama, one of the Alabama wideouts falls to them. They're not going to. But if they did at 31, okay, they'd be like, all right, this guy's too good to pass up. Some situation like that happens, okay. But I'm quite confident we're going to see an offensive lineman, maybe two O-linemen, but probably an offensive lineman and a defensive lineman with two of those first three picks, and maybe with all three of them. We'll see what happens. We'll take a break. We're going to talk some more NFL football, some draft, next with Josh Edwards from CBS Sports.
The program with Soren Petro.
All right, man, you're the best. Thank you.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
You're listening to the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Soren Petro with you. I'm going to talk some Chiefs football. Josh Edwards from CBS Sports is on our T-Mobile guest line. He is brought to you by our friends at Applause Custom Sight and Sound. You want that ultimate football theater? You want to be able to watch the NCAA tournament on multiple screens, watch every game? Applause Custom Sight and Sound can build that for you, along with music, surround sound in every room of the house. Be able to control the lighting all from the touchscreen on your smartphone, and rocket fast Wi-Fi all over the house, inside and out. That's Applause Custom Sight and Sound. Best in the business. Most companies in their line of work don't last 2 years. They're almost 20 years in business. You know Applause will be there when it's time to add on or change or adjust or just grow your system. Call 913-498-1183. Find them on the web at applausetheater.com. Josh, welcome to the T-Mobile guest line. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Soren. It's been too long.
It has been, and I want to start with a great piece I love. We always love when some of our Chiefs get mentioned in some of your great work there, talking about second-year players. And we felt like L'Jarius Sneed was probably the Chiefs' number one corner this year, and that you think even bigger things are in store for him in year two?
Yeah, I think you're looking for that level of consistency. Obviously, he missed a good chunk of the regular season. He had that good regular season opener and, suffered that injury shortly thereafter. We just didn't get to see him, I feel like, at his full potential. So I'm excited to see him back for another year to see just how much more he can grow as a player. But talking about a guy that, you know, has great length in a position of need for Kansas City. So he's definitely one that jumps out as having a bright future.
Why does I know what we've heard, but why does a guy like him, you know, last in the fourth round? I mean, because he getting off the bus, he looks like what you're going to draw up. He looks exactly like what Nick Saban wants at corner, what Bill Belichick wants at corner. How'd this kid last all the way to the fourth round?
Yeah, he was a safety in college, so there was a little bit of a projection on his part. And sometimes that's difficult, and you kind of, you know, tend to stick with the unknown, or I mean, you tend to stick with what you know instead of the unknown. So maybe some of these players that, you know, have had more experience playing the cornerback position were just sitting a little bit higher on teams' board. And, you know, the way that the draft works, you could be a second round talent and still fall to the fourth round because the margin of the gap between, a late first round pick, even sometimes, and an early third round pick is very slim. Second-round pick, fourth-round pick, you know, there's a very small margin of difference between these players sometimes, and sometimes you slip a little bit farther. So when you're really digging in and trying to separate these players, there were probably some teams that looked, you know, at the position and said, hey, this guy's played corner for a long time. Let's take him over a guy that is maybe a projection, and we don't know what he's going to look like in the NFL.
We just listened. We're talking to Josh Edwards, by the way, from CBS Sports. He's got his mock draft up at CBS Sports. A lot of great information. All the rankings at the different positions are up there. So if you're a draft nerd, you want to check out all his great work at CBSSports.com. We listened to Brett Veach this morning talking about, you know, where he thought this draft was deep. He mentioned offensive line in general, not just tackle, but tackles and the offensive line. First of all, do you agree, like most people, that this is a deep spot in the draft, the offensive line?
I think it's a little top-heavy. There's probably five players that I feel pretty comfortable with in the first round, and then, you know, it just kind of becomes hit or miss. I don't think it's the class that we saw last year with Tristan Wirfs and Jedrick Wills, Mekhi Becton. I don't think there's that level of talent, but there's certainly some depth. And I think really where you start to see that depth is when you get into the second and the third round. I mean, the Wyatt Davises from Ohio State, you know, once regarded as a first-round pick, he's a guy that could possibly be had on you know, in the third round or possibly early fourth round. So you see some of the potential when a player is once regarded that highly. And if you're able to get a player like that into the fourth round, I mean, that just shows there's incredible depth. I wouldn't say that it's the deepest position in the upcoming draft. I think edge rusher is actually pretty deep this year. But I would say that there is definitely some talent available at the offensive line positions that are definitely going to be an impact, provide some early impact for teams next year.
Do you agree that the interior, I'm going to come back to the edge part here in a second, the interior defensive line is kind of weak, that if you're shopping for defensive linemen, it is, like you just said, deep at edge, but also weak, not just not as good, but weak on the interior defensive line?
So just as in general, my thoughts on this draft is, you know, there might be 10 of these blue chip kind of players. And then the margin of talent difference between, you know, those late first round picks, again, and the early third round picks is very slim. So I think the depth is there for teams to get some really good impact players, even into the early stages of day three. So, you know, the defensive tackle position, the edge rusher positions are kind of a microcosm of that. You see a lot of guys that certainly have the ability to one day be high-level players, but for whatever reason, they just have been inconsistent. They haven't been able to reach their potential. So as we talk specifically about the defensive tackles, you look at a guy like Davion Nixon from Iowa, the flashes are obviously there. He's a player that, you know, could be an early impact player in the NFL, but the consistency for me is an issue. And we see, you know, Jay Tufele, the defensive tackle from USC, opted out this past season. Levi Onwuzurike from Washington opted out this past season. So that's something else we're sorting through. There's just more unknowns as a whole with this class, and I think the defensive tackle class really embodies that.
So based upon kind of, when you talk about the depth on edge rusher, if you're picking at 31 and 63, like the Chiefs are, and you want to come away with an offensive tackle and an edge rusher, you would go O tackle first, edge rusher second.
In my opinion, yes. Depending on how the board shakes out, of course, you know, the talent has to be there. But I think you're looking at a guy like Dylan Radins, who could be there at the end of the first round. You're looking even a Sam Cosmi that could be available at the end of the second round. You know, I think you're more likely to get a player ready to step in and compete day one at offensive tackle in the first round, whereas I think you're looking at a little bit of a decline if you wait until the second round, whereas the edge rusher position, I think you could get some really good players even into the third round. So Pittsburgh's Patrick Jones, for example, Duke's Chris Rump, Duke's Victor Demukaje. You know, there's a number. Pittsburgh's Rashad Weaver, Jordan Smith from UAB. I think the depth at the edge rusher position is going to potentially make a decision in the first round a little bit easier for teams, knowing that they can swing back around and get that spot in the second round or possibly even into the third.
How good do you think the receiver class is?
Oh, it's very good. It's very good. You know, and this is the second consecutive year that we've kind of been talking about the wide receiver classes being very good. You know, we're looking at the spread offenses that have reached the NFL, which obviously gives you more repetitions at the position. And that's something that we've seen at the college level too. I mean, wide receivers are getting more and more targets, more and more repetitions in practice than they ever have before, which means there's a lot of players with the ability to catch the football and be an impact player early. So when you look at the second round, possibly Kansas City having to replace a guy like Sammy Watkins, you know, maybe you look at Ole Miss's Elijah Moore. Maybe you look at South Carolina's Shai Smith, Western Michigan's Dwayne Eskridge. You know, there's so many players available at that position that I don't think you have to reach for one of those elite talents on day one. I mean, just look last year alone, Justin Jefferson, Chase Claypool, Jefferson taken in the latter half of the first round, Claypool a second round pick. You're able to get talent beyond those top three wide receivers. So I think the smart teams are going to take advantage of that and address other priorities early.
So tell me this. The top three wideouts, do you agree, are Ja'Marr Chase at LSU, Jalen Waddle at Alabama, and Devonta Smith at Alabama?
I do agree. There's a little bit of a gray area because of the Kyle Pitts designation. You know, he's not your traditional inline tight end. He's not going to be a guy that is a high-level blocker from day one in the NFL. But he can develop there. So I list him as a tight end because I think that's primarily how he's going to be used, at least more so than maybe a wide receiver, whereas, you know, those other three guys are strictly wide receivers. So yeah. The only reason that I would maybe, you know, sway from that top three is if you wanted to include Kyle Pitts, who, you know, is simply an elite pass catcher. I mean, you don't want to get hung up on the phrase of tight end or wide receiver when you've got a mismatch like that. Obviously, Kansas City, very familiar with the type of impact that Travis Kelce can make on the game.
Yeah, that's exactly the name that was coming to my mind. All right, so here's my point about those three on the wide receivers. Ja'Marr Chase opted out and didn't play. Devonta Smith had an incredible season, but he's 170 pounds. And Jalen Waddle got hurt after, what, four games. Which one of those three would be the most likely to slide for any of those reasons?
I think for me it would probably be Devonta Smith. And that's simply because it could be a case of teams overthinking things. I don't think he would be there that late in the first round, but if one of them did fall, I would probably say that Smith has the highest odds because, you know, the history of wide receivers that are that slight having success in the NFL isn't as large as, you know, some better physique, some better structures. But at the same time, I mean, the NFL is an offense-heavy game right now. NFL officiating is awarding NFL offenses for being high-powered. You know, we see targeting being more heavily enforced. We're seeing pass interference called much more tacky than we've ever seen in the past. You know, there's these hand checks and, you know, slight little grabs of the jersey are being flagged often now. So when you're talking about that and the possibility of that impacting a guy like Devonta Smith, it's not as big of an issue because teams aren't going to be as physical with him as they once were. He's going to have those clean releases off the line of scrimmage, and he's going to do what he does best, which is make plays after the catch. So while I don't think it's as big of an issue as it would have been maybe 10 years ago, I think there are so many traditional thinkers in the NFL that would make it very easy to overthink Smith's selection and allow him to possibly slide a little bit in the first round.
We're talking right now to Josh Edwards from CBS Sports. You know, we look around at the Chiefs and say, okay, where do they have spots? Where do they need things? One of them is linebacker. Damian Wilson is a free agent. Anthony Hitchens, probably not going anywhere this year, but gets pretty expensive next year and starts to get up there in age. Do you like the linebacker class, particularly because they do like Willie Gay Jr., and they a lot of times are only playing with two linebackers on the field, and then they go with safeties. And I think Willie Gay Jr. is the future as the outside backer. What do you think of the middle linebacker class?
Yeah, there's some talent. Obviously, everybody's familiar with Micah Parsons, you know, who's going to be the elite option in this class. Beyond him, you know, we talked about the depth again. There's a lot of question marks with that depth. You know, Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah from Notre Dame is closer to a safety than he is a linebacker. But I think, you know, when you're talking about today's defenses, there's so many using the nickel defense as their base that like you said, you're using more two linebacker sets as opposed to three. So maybe you take a guy like that that has the versatility to drop back into coverage, to take a running back out of the backfield, tight end, whatever it may be. I think there's a role for that in the NFL today. So he's one of those guys where I kind of struggle with the designation. You know, is he a linebacker? Is he a safety? He's more of a coverage guy, simply put, but there's going to be a role for that in the NFL with certain teams. Jamin Davis is a guy from Kentucky that has really been rising of late because he's a first-year starter, a guy with tremendous athleticism and only improved each week during the college football season. You know, so there's a lot of teams that view him as a potential late first-round kind of guy. You talk about Chaz Surratt from North Carolina. You talk about Nick Bolton from Missouri. Zaven Collins from Tulane. There's definitely some options to address the position. And like you said, I was a big Willie Gay fan last year. Obviously, he had his questions off the field. But that's a guy that has tremendous talent. And it would not surprise me if he ended up in a long-term starter's role with that defense.
With everybody spreading the field and going four wide, you know, is it hard to find linebackers now?
A little bit. They're being asked to do different things. So I think in a certain way, you know, the traditional fill the gaps, stop the run kind of linebackers are dying off a little bit in the sense that we're kind of transitioning more towards, you know, a guy that's going to be able to fall back into coverage. And we've seen a lot more 4-3 teams from a base set than 3-4 because you do need a little bit more speed in today's NFL. So I think in some ways the game is a little bit slow to transition. I think we've seen a lot more of these hybrid-type linebackers, safeties, you know, come out in the draft. Isaiah Simmons last year, Jeremy Chinn. We're going to see a lot more of that. And Owusu-Koramoah is one of those guys this year. You talk about Hamza Nasiruddin from Florida State. So we're seeing a lot more versatility in that position. And it's evolving just like, you know, anything else, just like the wide receiver, the quarterback position. It's evolving. And maybe that's one position that's kind of been a little bit slower to adapt.
Do you think, is there any of these quarterbacks or the five quarterbacks that you wouldn't touch? I mean, we're going to be thrilled to see all five of them go in the first round because it's five teams that aren't taking players the Chiefs might have interest in because they're not going to spend their first-round pick on a quarterback. But is there any of them that you would be running from if you were an NFL team?
I wouldn't go as far to say running from. I know in the draft industry, typically when you're a little bit lower on a player than, you know, maybe the consensus or maybe the trendy opinion – most tend to believe that you hate that player. There's certainly players that I like a lot more than other players. There's players that I, you know, like a little bit less than other players. For me, Mac Jones from Alabama is the guy that, you know, I have concerns with because in today's NFL, you've got to have a higher level of athleticism because you're being asked to step in on day one and compete. So what are your elite traits that you're going to be able to come into the NFL and fall back on while you learn the position? And so for me, you know, a guy like Trey Lance has tremendous athleticism, kind of like Josh Allen coming into the NFL. He has enough gifts athletically that's going to buy him some time and allow him to continue to learn the game, work on his accuracy, something that nobody thought that he could improve on. And he's become the quarterback that, you know, the top end of the projection for Josh Allen, he's about there. He's still got some areas where he needs to improve, but, you know, the fact that he's been able to use his mobility has bought him some time to be that player. Mac Jones, he's not as much of a statue as maybe, you know, we make it out to be. But I also am concerned with, you know, the amount that he went to his first read in college and his ability to adapt in that way. He's certainly accurate. He throws a beautiful deep ball. But we're to the point where we really nitpick these players. And, you know, as a passer, if that's going to be your ultimate gift, then you've got to be clean in every phase. And I just have a little bit of a concern with the amount of times that he was able to go to his first read in college.
We're talking to Josh Edwards about the NFL draft with CBS Sports. Time for our Final Four, brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. If an orthopedic or sports injury puts you on the bench, the same experts that care for the Royals can see you quickly. Request an appointment at kansashealthsystem.com/sportsmedicine. Josh, I will start you with this. J.J. Watt has how many sacks over the next 2 years with the Cardinals?
2 years, I will say 15.
15, okay. Optimism there. Give me the best wide receiver in this class will be who?
Jamar Chase from LSU.
Okay. Give me a sleeper in this draft.
A sleeper in this draft.
Or someone you're higher on than other people. I mean, you don't have to find me some guy who's not going to get drafted who will end up making a roster. Just, you know, somebody that's better than you think they're getting the hype.
Yeah, let me I do really like Tylan Wallace from Oklahoma State, the wide receiver. He's a little bit bigger. He had the injury last year, so I think people are down on him a little bit from that regard, but plays with tremendous strength. You know, is able to go up and high point the football, make those contested catches. He's a guy that, and we saw this past week, he runs a lot faster than maybe what we thought initially. So that would be the guy that I'm going to buy on a little bit early than a lot of other players.
All right, then give me who you're selling on. Who's the bust?
Oh, man, that's tough.
You know, and they don't have to be a bust. Like I said, just somebody that's kind of the opposite, getting too much hype for what you think
they're
going to be.
Yeah, because I don't want to say a bust, because then that'll always come back, and, you know, he'll end up being a star and you know, whatever. But a guy that I'm lower on than others would probably be Liam Eichenberg, who is an offensive tackle from Notre Dame. I just haven't seen the top 50 caliber player that some others are projecting. So he would be one of the ones that I'm just not as high on as maybe the general consensus.
Yeah. All right. It's a couple of names for us to keep an eye out for there, because Chiefs need wideouts. So Tylan Wallace would be a nice one. They need an offensive tackle. So if Eichenberg ends up coming here, we're going to be a little bit nervous. You know, Josh, always love talking to you, buddy. Appreciate the time. Keep up the great work there at CBS, and we'll talk to you on down the road.
Absolutely. Anytime. Thank you.
You bet. Josh Edwards from CBS Sports with us on our T-Mobile guest line. T-Mobile is now America's fastest and largest 5G network. We will take a break. Come back, wrap things up here with the kicker.
The program with Soren Petro.
Yep, this is the way it is here.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We're almost done for the day, but there's just a few more things we'd like to share.
But there's still more.
Here's the kicker.
Here's the kicker of this whole thing.
On the program.
But first, the Jazz into the hour answer. 1984 NFL supplemental draft. Three of the first four picks went to the Hall of Fame. Who didn't? That would be Mike Rozier. He went number two. Steve Young, number one. Gary Zimmerman, number three. Reggie White, number four.
By the way, playing for Jazz, great Cajun food from Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen. Go to jazzkitchen.com. Check out their great menu. Dine in or carry out at Jazz. Listen, we didn't have a chance to get into this. Maybe we'll get into it more later in the week. Mizzou got a commitment from Sam Horn. This is the number six, according to 24/7 Sports, the number six player in Georgia, the number four pro-style quarterback, the number 62 player nationally. Mizzou got a quarterback. By the way, he's a pitcher, too, as well. I don't know if he's going to play baseball and football at Mizzou. This is what you do in college football. You go out and you get a high-caliber quarterback. This is why Mizzou went out and hired Eli Drinkwitz. Eli Drinkwitz runs good offense. Eli Drinkwitz can develop quarterbacks. It's clear he's able to talk to and recruit quarterbacks. It isn't as difficult as some schools make it look. Find the quarterback position. Go hire a coach that knows what good quarterbacks are like and can recruit them to your school. Congrats, Tiger fans.